Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Come on down.
She knew those sandwiches were 15 days old.
The police are intimidated by funny women.
I mean, I like drinking, but it's the stories that keep me going.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
You join us now for a very special episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. We are joined by the fantastic journalist and broadcaster, it's Samira Ahmed!
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. As you've all got a bottle of Prosecco each. It's very impressive.
It does look that way now, yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah. The optics are bad, I realise.
I think the optics are good. No, we're drunk women.
The optics are just spot on, I think. That's what it says on the tin.
It's, yes, we are on brand. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, well, thanks for inviting someone who doesn't drink onto your podcast.
We do that.
We do, yeah. We've had quite a few.
Yeah.
Literally anyone but men is basically that's our thing. But like for a year we allow on, we have men's month and we give them a chance, you know. Yeah. And then other than that, women, no matter if they drink or if they don't.
Yeah. And now that we've solidified our parameters, yeah, we have one question. Samira, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
The very minor end of hate crime, but when I was 10 in 1978 and the National Front, quite a big force in the UK,
yeah,
I was with a group of kids, all of us, you know, of Asian heritage, in a playground in South London. And yeah, this group of white kids just started hassling us and just started getting, you know, threatening, and they were started shoving us around.
Oh,
and I was the oldest, so I said, we need to go. And they started tripping us up. We ended up having to run.
Oh.
And I was really upset about it because I was angry. I just thought, you know, I don't, they thought they were cowards.
Yeah.
And so, but I did get a story out of it because I wrote a letter to John Craver's Newsround, which got read out on the programme.
Wow.
And I got a badge.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And more than 30 years later, the co-presenter of that episode emailed me out of the blue to say, was it you?
Who sent him that?
So I wrote a whole piece about it. It's The Guardian. It's called News Round Racism and Me.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That is amazing.
I didn't even know, like, well, I think when I watched News Round, I feel like there wasn't, like, letters that they read out.
Oh, in the summer, they had a version called News Round Extra.
Oh.
And they would encourage you to send in letters, and if it got read out, you got I'm a News Round News Hound badge. Sadly, I've lost the badge, although I still got the letter from John Craven. And then I bumped into him when I was a reporter at Channel 4 News at the Ministry of Agriculture during the foot and mouth outbreak, was like daily news conferences, and we were, you know, talking about dead cows, and then suddenly, hey, John Craven, when I was 10, you sent me a News Round News Hound badge. And he just looked a bit baffled. He went, oh, that's very nice.
Did he remember the story as to why?
No. I love that the co-presenter remembered, though.
Yeah, well, she was one of the first Asian women reporters at the BBC.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
So you read the article, and basically she felt that they had ducked the central issue, which was the racism, and they'd not talked about it really the way they should, and she was wary of getting drawn into talking about her own experience. Yeah, you can imagine what it must have been like to be a female reporter at the time, let alone an Asian one. So.
Oh man, this is so important. This is amazing.
In the days before the internet, if you didn't just happen to turn on the television, you wouldn't know that your letter had been read out. So I just turned on the TV, and they were reading out my letter.
Oh my gosh. Did you turn on the TV thinking they might be reading it, or you just randomly?
Well, yeah, because you don't know how long it takes from posting in a letter to when they might choose to read it.
Yeah.
God, I've just remembered more crimes.
Oh, go on.
Oh my gosh.
Well, this is a bit of a solemn one, but I was punched in the face by an ex-boyfriend.
Oh my God!
I'd only gone out with him for 2 weeks, and he'd got very weird over the summer, and it turned out he'd been lying and making up all these things. And when I said I wanted to die, like, oh, you know, his aunt had died of cancer, and then he had cancer, and I just thought, okay, this is weird. So I think he was mentally ill. But I broke up with him, and he suddenly appeared outside my college, and just hit me in the face and ran away.
Oh my God.
And I had witnesses, and obviously I was shocked and it hurt, but I decided, he turned himself in at the police, I decided not to press charges because I could tell he was an attention-seeking fantasist, and I didn't see what would be the benefit to me. And, you know, one of the things that's very interesting, when I've interviewed actors and singers over the years, including women like Debbie Harry and Chrissy Hynde, who've both experienced rape, you know, there's a reason why they've decided not to go to the police. I'm not in any way comparing my experience to theirs, but there's individual women make individual decisions for the reasons they do at the time.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I went through, Oxford was very archaic in those days, so it had internal college disciplinary procedures. So I reported it, I had a meeting with my college principal, and I think he had some discipline, and he had to pay compensation for the damage to my glasses, but I just wanted it done with. And there was a kind of equivalent of a restraining order that he couldn't come near college.
Wow.
And I never heard or saw him again.
Okay.
But you know, the one thing that actually did bother me, and I should have said it to my college principal, is I remember, you know, a few years later, the college has kept in touch with me as a kind of alumnus. And I remember seeing him kind of years later, the principal, and saying, oh, yes, you're that one who came to see me all upset after that strange incident with that boy. And I just thought,
upset.
Whoa.
That's really not how I would label me, you know.
Oh,
and he didn't
gosh.
Mean anything negative by it, you know. But I just, it was horrible to think that's what I was in his vision. I was, that woman who had, you know, like somehow you've attracted trouble.
Yeah.
It's the language that people use without any thought to it.
So I just remember that really odd incident, you know. When
oh,
you were
my
wondering.
Gosh.
And like an odd incident rather than a terrible event.
Assault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
But I haven't thought about it really for years. And it's only because... It's
that's
like,
what we're here for, is to dredge up all trauma.
But it is funny on this podcast when we ask people, have you been the victim of crime? And initially they go, I don't think so. Wait a minute. And then you realise.
And that was the last one I thought of, and that was actually the most serious, you could argue.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's very common too, that it's sort of, the big ones that we sort of park.
It was really important to me to not be defined by it. And also, I suppose the one time I do think violence and thinking about it is when I think most women, I think, have had some experience of violence.
Yes.
Mm.
It's nice to be able to look back and question how things were handled. And it doesn't change how things were handled, but to have the power to go, oh, that was really badly phrased, or that person really didn't give me the respect that I deserved in the moment.
That was 1987, so 32 years ago.
I sort of considered that a modern time, so I am still disappointed that it wasn't handled better.
Oh, the 80s was not in many ways a modern time.
Yeah.
I tell my children about it. And
it's wild, isn't it? Because, still even here in that year, I'm like, that was 15 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Everything's 15. Everything's 15 years ago to me.
What? Because, like, I'm 12 now, so...
Well, do you want to hear the weirdest thing? My daughter, who's 20, said she was going to a party, and it was a costume-themed party. Do you know what the theme of the party was?
Oh, God.
The 2010s.
No!
Oh,
what
no.
the hell? How would you know how to dress?
I can't. I feel bad about myself.
That's her generation. That's when they were children.
Get off.
But, like, what even is a defining moment of the 2010s? It's the same as the North, like...
It's just not complete. All right, all right.
But what would... Yeah, well, now I've just completely revealed my...
I would have to do a lot of research to even know what was
like,
happening.
What was...
It is weird, though.
So
like,
out of touch.
Well,
I don't know. I know sometimes...
And yet, if we said to you, well, I don't know how old you are, but if you said to me the 70s or the 80s, yeah. I would know exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but it takes 100%. Time, doesn't it? Isn't it like 20 years after a time that you can kind of look back on it and go, oh, wow, that was definitive. Like, I feel like the 90s have only just become this massive thing.
It's
of,
an era now.
Yeah, the 90s, you know what the 90s is, right? Mm. You kind of, you know, it's
the best time ever.
Yeah,
it was in so many ways, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
I
then
love
maybe
the 90s.
I love the 90s.
Yeah, I wonder what we'll kind of look back on 2010 or on 2020.
Yeah.
Like...
Well, we lost 2020. That year just disappeared.
Yeah.
There's no fashion to report apart from Zoom.
Oh my God! In like 20 years' time, we're like teenagers doing retro kind of like mask wearing parties. Yeah.
Oh my God! Top up dressing.
Yeah, exactly.
That
blazer
will be an ironic party.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. What a shame. Because I started writing like kids TV about 10 years ago. So now I have people who are like 20 or in their early 20s going like, oh my God, you wrote Wolfblood or something like that. And I'm like, oh,
did
wow.
You?
Yeah. Your kids might have been just the right era.
Totally the right generation.
So it is really funny because it's kind of like, I don't even consider myself to sort of, you know, have done it for that long. But when you're writing kids TV, 10 years is huge because you go from being a 10-year-old to a 20-year-old.
Huge.
Yeah.
And there's a generation of kids that have basically gone through university in a pandemic. So they haven't had the full proper experience.
Feels like maybe that's what my experience was like anyway. So, am I just sat in my room? Yes, I am.
We always ask on this podcast, what would you say if you had the perp... Maybe they can't see you. Maybe they can. Like, you're allowed to shout at them. You're allowed to hit them. Anything you want to do. What would you say or do to the perps?
Well, I think about the children who are being racist, and I just wonder how they've grown up and whether, you know, whether they even remember the incident, whether they are still racist. Because, you know, kids grow up influenced by what's around them and their families, and people do change, you know.
Okay.
So I'd like to think they might remember it and feel really ashamed.
Interesting. Mm. I hope so. Yeah, that's they fucking better, like little shits.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing those stories. No, it wasn't.
Not
they
at all.
Amazing.
No.
Proper crimes.
This is it. Everybody has these stories. This is what I mean. I like drinking, but it's the stories that keep me going.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
This is a case where a joke got somebody in trouble. So I have two questions. What year is this and what do you think the joke was?
Because I think that it feels like it's modern, right? Because of the fact that actually the sort of cancel culture and stuff like that people, you know, it feels like jokes can sort of get
like
you into trouble a lot more
Twitter
these days.
And stuff.
But I feel like we're probably going historical. So I think it might be like from a long time ago.
Okay.
And it could, maybe it's some kind of joke that in terms of getting someone into trouble, it's not that the joke was offensive. Maybe it's that the joke was wrong. So it's some kind of war or something that was started off the back of somebody. You know, sometimes you make a joke. And you're
like,
oh my God.
Comedy. It's not necessarily comedy at all. Yeah.
Okay. So somebody, like, you know, when...
I throw my glove at you or whatever.
Yeah, when people make jokes that aren't comedians. So I don't think it's a comedian.
So maybe it's a courtier or something. Maybe it's like...
Yeah.
A member of Queen Elizabeth I's court making a bit of a joke and getting himself put in the tower.
Yes, okay.
That's a great guess.
16th century.
Yes, a courtier getting cancelled for just having too many bells.
Cancelled courtier on Netflix. Yeah. I'd watch it. My head went right to comedy and it might not be. I went right to Lenny Bruce.
Okay.
I can't tell you what the joke was. I mean, he said a bad word.
He kept getting arrested.
He kept getting arrested. Well, yeah. That's why my
head went there. These are all excellent guesses. You've all got wonderful instincts. None of you are quite right.
She's so nice to us.
Like the range between 16th century and 19th is, you know, somewhere in the middle.
we edged around it somehow. Somehow, some way.
Okay, the joke was about sandwiches. Yes, you can't say anything these days. But actually, it was 1957.
Okay.
I will now give you more information. That was just a sort of a...
Yeah, see where your head goes. And I do take sandwiches very seriously, so...
The context to explain this joke. We are talking about Mary Elizabeth Wilson, and she was nicknamed the Merry Widow of Windy Nook, which is giving you a bit of a clue as to what's happening. I think people are just intimidated by funny women. And also, it does sound like a lesser-known Shakespeare play, doesn't it? The Merry Widow of Windy Nook.
Yeah. Also, like, in terms of a nickname, I'd be a bit like, Spans is my nickname, because it's like Hannah, Spanner, like, you know, a bit of fun. But that feels like they're really like, right, can we know if her husband's dead? Where does she, like, live? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot going on in that
it's
nickname.
It's a very detailed nickname.
Yeah.
It's writing a whole story, really.
Feels like one she didn't give herself.
Yes. Now, the sandwich joke occurred at Mary's fourth wedding. She was getting married to 76-year-old Ernest Wilson. She is 66 at this time, and they have a lovely spread, but there are a lot of cakes and sandwiches left over. And we're getting to the joke.
Were you expecting something more hard-hitting? It might...
I just wonder, there's going to be arsenic suddenly involved in this.
Mary's friend asks her, what should we do with all these sandwiches and cake? And Mary replies, let's save them for the funeral.
Oh. And that's a pretty good one, to be fair.
It's a solid gag.
Oh, is she like a black widow?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the arsenic wasn't far off then.
Yeah, yes. You were on the money. Mm.
But also, even if it's completely spot on, I still want to be friends with her. She sounds amazing.
She sounds sassy and I like
sassy.
Her.
Just don't let her cook
We
for you.
Always side with the woman. It's a really terrible reflex. We're like, but she was trying. Like, no, she murdered. But she...
Yeah. What, the patriarchy?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a powerful that force. Okay, save us for the funeral.
And now Ernest Wilson, who she has just married, laughs along. Oh. He laughs at this joke.
Good for you, Ernie.
Yeah, right. Yes, I am old. So my question is, how much longer did he live?
Oh, no.
After laughing at this joke at his wedding.
I mean, if he hadn't laughed, he wouldn't have lasted very long. It would have
been the last laugh.
Yeah, I'm getting married in a few weeks and nobody laughs at my speech, in which there are a lot of age jokes. I'm marrying a slightly older man as well. And I mean, it's more of a roast, if I'm honest.
We'd be disappointed if it
your wedding
wasn't.
Roast.
My wedding roast.
Roasting
But I mean, oh, she's bold, isn't she? But I think perhaps a year, maybe. I'm going to go a year.
I think less. 6 months.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-mm. See, I'm getting this picture of, this is her fourth marriage. I'm presuming that the previous three have also died. Mm-hmm. Boy, she's bold if she's joking about it.
Maybe it's a lot less.
Maybe it's like a few days.
Yeah.
On the honeymoon.
Yeah, so I'm going to go less, just for variety. I will say 8 days.
8 days?
Yes.
You're a year? One are you year. Sticking with 6 months?
No, I'm going to go even less. I'm going to go something like a week.
A week?
Just sneak in under.
Right, price is right.
Yeah, I think I've got a bit of a game show mentality. I'm not sure this is the right approach.
I love it. It's absolutely the right mentality. What did you say?
Well, I said a year.
You said a year.
Because
okay.
I still believe in marriage because I'm not married yet.
So it's so romantic that he survived for a year.
Yeah, true love.
That's a beautiful story. See, if you'd gone one day over, you would have won. It's 15 days. Ooh. Taylor gets the prices right.
Oh.
So okay. He...
Come on down.
So 15 days, he dies. Now, to be fair, you actually can't keep sandwiches for 15 days. So the joke's...
The joke's on everyone for not understanding. Bacteria.
It's not going to be sanitary. But I do believe this is what people say when someone is hiding in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, I said a joke got someone in trouble, but it was really more a murder that got someone in trouble.
Right. That's always the way.
But the joke helped.
Who reported the joke?
Well, so this is it. There is gossip. This joke got back to someone. So my question is, who heard this joke and didn't like it?
Well, we know he heard the joke at the time. So one of his family, I guess?
Okay, family member.
Granddaughter.
I wonder if one of her friends.
One of her friends?
Mm. A jealous friend.
Bad friend. Depending on your point of view.
A frenemy.
Disloyal friend.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if she's accumulated quite a bit of wealth on the back of...
Yeah.
I've already thrown her under the bus. Like, she's killed four men now, like, but we don't even know that.
Well, had he been married before? That's the big question.
That's true.
You know. See, if he was like a lonely widower, it might have been like a, as you say...
That's a really sort of good question.
An unhappy sister.
Yeah.
Yes.
I actually...
But I like the idea that it's like the friend that you didn't ask to be a bridesmaid. It's like, it's that one, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
She's like, I'll get her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 76.
Teresa, you don't even like satin.
There's too much walking. You would never have done it.
Too much walking.
Come on. I unfortunately don't know about his previous, if he was married before. That would be really useful, but I don't have that. Loads of people were gossiping, but the who heard about it and started to take action? It was the police. The police heard that she'd been joking about these murders. It got back to them.
Oh.
And they were increasingly suspicious of this happy widow, and they decided to investigate her because the police are intimidated by funny women.
Is this a British story?
Yes.
Yeah. This woman does sound like a really bad person. I can see all in black and white. It's like a Miss Marple story, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. It's like very 50s.
It really is. The Merry Widow of Windy Nook.
Yeah. Within this case, there's sort of this implication that if she'd stopped joking, she might have gotten away with it.
Oh, my God. You know, that's so going to be my downfall one day.
I don't know what I'm doing. Putting that out on the internet.
Yeah.
Be played in evidence.
Your headstone will be killed by her own wit.
Yeah.
Future edition of drunk women solving crimes.
Just too happy and cracking wise about it.
That makes me like her, though, that she just couldn't not quip about it. She couldn't help herself.
I know.
I'm trying to work out who would play her in the film.
Yeah.
Ooh. And she's 66 when we join her in this story,
yes,
right?
She is.
She's British.
Yeah.
She's funny.
Yeah.
What are we thinking? Jennifer Saunders, maybe?
She's quite sexy, you know.
Yeah.
We'll get this pitch together in a minute. All right.
Good.
Okay, so now, Mary got through four husbands between 1955 and 1957.
2 years?
Yeah.
And I thought there was a shortage of men after the Second World War.
Yes.
Well, these were much older men, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Right, so they might not have actually gone to war.
They might not have been soldiers. They might, that's have a dad's army.
That's a ridiculously short amount of time. Like, she's really making this obvious.
Well, yes.
You say that, but, you know, life expectancy was, what, 60-something for men at the time, wasn't it?
Actually, yeah. That's a good point.
Okay, so she's just unlucky because...
Yeah.
They're older gentlemen.
I mean, in terms of getting away with it.
Yeah, is she counting on the fact that people are like, well, it kind of, you know, if she married someone who was 30, then...
Yeah.
Gosh. I wonder if the wedding guests were all the same. So here we are going.
I think there is an element of that because...
So, the last sandwiches were better.
This joke was not an isolated incident, by the way. She had a penchant for dark humour.
Penchant.
She had a penchant for dark humour. And I was going to ask you, what other jokes do you think she might have made in this time? And who is she making them to? Like, what other professions is she cracking wise?
I guess she sees a lot of undertakers.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, really?
No! She's joking to undertakers. What do you think she's saying to them?
Can I have a loyalty card?
Ding, ding,
no
ding.
No way! Oh, my God. Am I this woman?
Yeah, discount.
Discount.
Shut up.
Yeah, seriously. She's she asks her local undertaker for a discount.
Wow.
She's like, you know, come on, I'm in here all the time. I'm your best customer.
I know you're already familiar with my work.
Yeah. And she, the registrar's office, where she got married, and then when she had to record her husband's death, she is quoted as saying, there should be a discount for me. So she's recycling materials.
Yeah, it's a little bit hack now.
Or a psychopath. I always forget the difference. Are you a sociopath or a psychopath?
Oh gosh, I just listened to a podcast where they like
I think she's a fleshy type, isn't she? Because there's a whole flirtatious, you know, almost attention-seeking
yes.
aspect of it, and sort of
and the charmingness,
and the charmingness,
yeah, sort of enjoying the grandeur of yeah. it.
It depends. Like, I mean, I suppose it depends if she murdered. Well, you did say there was a murder.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's kind of because I feel as though if like I did genuinely marry four men in 2 years and they all died, I think maybe
you'd
I'd tap into some gallows
it.
Humor,
yeah.
you know. So it's kind of like, yeah. but if she's, I think if I murdered them, I'd be a bit more like do you know what, Hannah? Yeah, actually, don't make those jokes.
Or is it a double bluff?
Yeah, they'll be like, oh gosh, she's grieving so much.
Well, she's a serial killer. The whole thing about them is they are, you know, they get bolder and they.
Yes. Yeah. yeah.
They sort of revel in
yes,
it.
With what they get away with. They're constantly pushing, maybe.
Yeah, the plain sight thing is just, it's ridiculous
yeah.
how far that goes.
And as you guys have said, you know, these are solid jokes. They're gallows humour. And they are the kind of jokes that you would sort of make amongst friends, you know, if you sort of trusted that everyone's on the same page.
Yeah.
And that you're not a murderer.
Was the Edinburgh Fringe happening yet? Did she do a nice...
She was like just like trying out material in the green room before she went on.
A solid first hour from Mary.
Mary the widow. Yeah, so she had this cavalier, but it was her cavalier attitude that alerted people. And some of her marriages only lasted...
You're barely allowed to have that in the 50s as a woman anyway, even if you're
yeah.
not knocking people off. So,
so if they can get
Why
you,
is she so confident and self-assured?
Yeah, two attorneys.
Yeah, there's like people... Yeah, the police are doing investigations into a couple of women who gave some really good speeches at some weddings. They're like, they're too funny. Something's up here.
Something's
you
up.
Know a lot of words. And how to put them together.
We don't like it.
Drunk women solving crime.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So some of her marriages only lasted a few weeks, but it was always enough time for her to establish herself as the rightful heir of the estates, inheriting money after each death. And 15 days was the shortest marriage. So my question is, how long was her longest marriage?
Oh, well, now I'm super suspicious of her if she's kind of...
Well, she also four weddings within 2 years, so there couldn't have been
well,
that
four
long.
Funerals within
four 2 years. Within 2 years.
Not necessarily...
So the first one might have been a longer marriage and...
Yeah, before she realised what she could get away with, maybe.
Expand on that.
Yeah, well, let's go with a year for the first marriage.
Okay,
I'll go with
lower.
8 months.
Okay.
It's the longest.
I'm going to go for like 20 days, because I went a year to start with, and I have egg on my face, so.
Well, Samira gets it, but you're still quite far off.
Okay.
It is 41 years.
Oh, of course. That makes sense that she was actually just married before.
Oh, my gosh.
I love that you're still quite a way off. It's 40 years that you're off.
Well, at least I'm in the right unit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The right unit. Like any good detective.
That was in the 1910s.
Yes, so I'm going to give you a bit more about her background now. So,
okay.
She got
Tell us about Windy Nook.
Yeah. Did a ruby wedding anniversary, obviously, very romantic. Did all the killing in the space of 2 years. But, so, she was born Mary Elizabeth Cassidy on the 11th of June, 1889, in County Durham. And she married her first husband, John Knowles, around November 1914. and they settled in Windy Nook, Gateshead. So 1914.
She's about 25.
Yes.
Okay.
This is why it's great to have clever people.
An actual, yeah, an actual.
Yeah. We are, our like catchphrase in this podcast is maths is impossible. So it's not today. Not today.
No, we have some brain power
We've
today.
We've got some top brass detectives.
Hang on, I should know where, and here comes the question from the American, just for contrast. I cannot remember where County Durham is.
North really east. Up north.
Yeah. Northeast.
Northeast. Lincolnshire.
North of Lincolnshire.
Oh, no, north, north. Okay.
It's near.
North, so north.
It's under Newcastle.
Yeah, it's
right?
under Newcastle.
Oh, it's below Newcastle. Okay.
Yeah. It's got a cathedral.
Yeah.
Yeah, that narrows it down, Hannah.
A Greggs. I went there recently, so I've got the intel, guys.
It's got a Greggs.
Where is it? It's got a Greggs. No further questions.
And it's on the shortlist for UK City of Culture.
Oh.
Front row reference.
Okay. Hello.
We got the intel.
Okay, thank you. Because I always my head always puts it in Ireland, even though I've lived here way too long to think that.
No.
I'm adorable.
This is not relevant, but earlier Ernie wanted chocolate. My son is off school with chicken pox, so I was looking after him. So thank you. And he asked for chocolate. I went, no, you can't have any chocolate. And he went, what if I do this face? Tried to make his own lip wobble. Where have you learned this? Did it work? I said he had to eat a banana first.
I remember my friend once came around to my house and I was like, do you want some orange squash? And he was like, I have to have a glass of water before I have squash because my mum says I have to have a glass of water. And I was like, that bitch isn't here. So I didn't quite say that, but I was like, just have the squash, dude. Like, she's not here. And he was like, I will have a glass of water first. And I realised that
she's in his head.
Yeah, he's really successful now.
I was that kid. I took my rules with me.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't allowed to watch a film, I'd be like, I'll just be in the other room looking at my thumbs. This is rated R.
And instead, you should tell your friend that if he's going to drink the glass of water, you drink it after the orange squash to wash away the sugar on your teeth. That's the only point of it.
His mum was an idiot. That's really interesting.
Yeah, okay. There's a case to say you rinse your mouth after drinking fruit juice.
Pretty. This is why we need clever people.
Can I just say I did not impose that on my own children. I just know that's the argument.
Interesting.
Okay.
It's so funny, those things that stay with you, though. It always stayed with me that he did what he was supposed
Unless
to do
Unless she was
at
trying
home,
to make him
house.
Full so he wouldn't drink the whole glass of orange squash.
Yeah. Are you still in touch? I want to find out more.
Do you know what I am? And he's like 7 foot now, so I'm starting to think like maybe water is good. Like he's like huge guy. But yeah. Sorry.
Where did we get to?
Yeah.
Well, it's about rules. Rule following and...
He's 41 years. She'd got married in 1914.
Yes.
1914. Very good memory.
She even keeps us on track. It's fantastic. You're hired.
They were married from 1914 to 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish that I knew the year that the next thing happens, but multiple sources just said at some point, which was very frustrating. This is why I don't have as much information as I would like. At some point between 1914 and 1955, which is a large span of time, Mary makes a change and she moves her lover, John Russell, in as a lodger. Now, I genuinely don't know if he moves in as a lodger and they become lovers or if he's her secret lover.
Right.
And she moves him in so it's easier to bang him. Like, I don't know which way around that happens.
Well, she's a very in plain sight woman, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
Yeah. Is he similar age, a bit older, younger? She's in her mid-60s by then.
Yes. I think he is a similar age. He might be a tiny bit younger, but again, I don't have enough information.
So interesting. See, I don't think anyone believed that people had sex over the age of about 40 anyway, did they, in 1950s England?
Yeah.
So probably. Why would you suspect anything?
Well, yeah.
Even
absolutely.
Within a marriage.
Yeah.
Very suspicious.
What, you like each other that much? What?
I also love that you described it as made a change, moved in her a living
no,
lover.
I was like, wow.
That's quite a big change.
I thought she was going to get a haircut or something.
Or the menopause.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that. If you're going through the change and like the change is just taking a lover. That would be lovely.
It's my turn.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, honey. It's one of the symptoms.
I've got my hot water bottle.
I sweat and I sleep with other men. I didn't make the science.
It's good for me, apparently. So.
Oh my God, if enough women said that, that's what, you know, we can make this happen.
Okay.
We absolutely can. Why not?
Why not?
I can tell you a fact I do know. In 1955, first husband John Knowles dies, and the death is presumed to be natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, how soon does she marry the lover, John Russell?
I hope it's the same day.
Quite soon.
Yeah.
She's inherited everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So is there paperwork? Yeah. Do you think after?
I think she'd wait for the probate and all that.
2 weeks. I don't know a lot about probate. Yeah, a couple of months.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of months.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with same day.
Okay.
It's the UK's first in and out service. Yes,
like Vegas rules.
Yeah. This is 1950s England.
It is 5 months. I'm giving it to Samira.
Right. Okay.
5 months. Okay. By the way, Lincolnshire, I know that this is not the right area. I just keep saying you. Love you.
She's married the lover, John Russell.
Mm-hmm.
He dies in 1956 or early 1957. And the attending physician declared that both men had died of natural causes, and the merry widow inherits their money, which is £42, which doesn't sound like that much now, but it was like loads.
It wasn't that much.
Was
not that much in 1950s.
Is that all?
Yeah, they're not rich people.
That cannot be right.
That's what it is.
Murder for £42.
And freedom. Sweet, sweet freedom.
Well, now you're selling me.
Was she accused of murdering him?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because,
For 50, like... This I hate about putting money. A price on it, though, because you're
this
kind of
this isn't about money, though, then. This is about... the power she gets from isn't about it.
It could be. They lived quite a modest life. Like, he was a labourer on a farm and stuff.
The lover was.
No,
the lover.
The husband was.
Oh, okay.
And what had she done? Or was she a housewife?
She was a housewife, but she did do something. I did actually have... I had that written down, and then I didn't keep it because I thought the case would be too long.
I think we talk too much about women's careers. I would like to know more about what she did in the home.
For a second.
Could she sew? Could she bake?
You know, just things like, was she more educated than him or not? Or was she semi-illiterate?
Yeah.
You know, all these things are interesting, aren't they, when you come to look at a defence? Was there domestic violence?
I was wondering that. Was it a horrific marriage?
Excellent questions. In June 1957, Wilson married her third husband, Oliver Leonard, and he was a retired estate agent, and he died only 12 days into their marriage, leaving her £50.
And some bad suits.
Some bad suits. And some great jokes about how small her bathroom is. And then she married the fourth husband, Ernest Wilson. His estate included £100, a bungalow, and life insurance. And this is where we came
in. With okay. So £42, but so now we're working our way up. We get a bungalow
starting
now.
Starting to graft it a bit better.
But how's she meeting all these guys as well? Like, you know, it's obviously...
It's a good question.
Windy Nook is this swinging area for single people.
Yeah, what are they all doing?
I bet she was really charming.
I think she... I mean, like, this is where we came in too, with her snappy patter at the wedding. So maybe people are glad to have a laugh. Like,
fun date.
So now, Mary did one thing after the fourth husband's death that also made her look suspicious. Question, what was that?
Did she dance in the cemetery?
I like it.
I thought you were going to go like, yes. I'm like, shut up. Oh dear. Oh dear. Too far.
I mean, Tinder wasn't a thing, but was she on like 1950s Tinder? Like, did she get straight out there for the next
Get straight out there and seen flirting with?
Like picking up guys at the funeral. What are you doing after?
Slightly more extreme than I was suggesting.
But most people don't have plans after, so, you know. It's a good time for a date.
Any further guesses?
So you're saying we didn't get it right?
I am saying that.
So what made her look suspicious?
Yeah.
I wondered if it was just something about how quickly she filed whatever paperwork it takes to claim the estate. Like, she was just in that office a little bit too fast.
Was she joking about it? I mean, it feels like maybe within her character to be like...
Yeah.
You know, it's dead in here, like my husband that I killed, or whatever. Like,
that's
I mean,
how we started.
They're not all going to be singers, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I'm going to tell you.
They're not all going to be singers.
She did not bother to attend the funeral.
That is getting a bit sloppy, isn't it?
It is, right?
Attention to detail really matters. Yes.
Yeah, it's like she wanted to get caught, I feel, a bit at this point.
Yeah. This is when arrogance kicks in, though.
Yeah. Right.
When people have gotten away with something, they just start going like, how far can I push this?
Yeah. Also, she knew those sandwiches were 15 days old. She goes, I'm not going to that funeral.
They're all
going to
die. Yeah.
She didn't even go to the funeral.
Now, as you know, by this time, she's become a figure of local gossip concerning both the frequency at which her spouses died and her rather cheerful attitude towards the pattern. So the police are onto her and they exhume the bodies of the last two husbands.
Oh, wow.
So question, what does that reveal?
I mean, do we go back to arsenic?
Yeah.
Was Samira right all along?
Arsenic, yeah.
That could be the earliest someone has cracked a case. It's the first thing you said.
Well, just, you know, it's just thinking of all those Miss Marples. It's
yeah.
I think it must be poison because that's the classic, you know, widow weapon. And it looks like natural causes.
Yeah, and it could be rat poison or something domestic that you would drop in.
Mm. I'll say strychnine to be different.
Okay.
That's the other one I was thinking of.
I'll say they laughed so hard they died. That's how I want my husband to go.
The corpses look like they were laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, apart from Hannah, you guys are onto it.
Oh.
They were insecticide. There were high levels of phosphorus, which is indicative of some kind of beetle poison.
Oh, wow.
So, question, what does her defence claim about this discovery?
He was accidentally doing it by the mislabeled bottles or something.
That's great, yeah.
Mm. If he was a farm worker,
would
he have had... Well, the first husband would have had exposure to the chemicals, and then the second one had lived on the premises, so... Could the defense be that, well, we used this on the farm, it was an insecticide?
Yeah, okay.
It was natural exposure.
That's good too.
Yeah, it feels like, I feel like the defense would be it's accidental and she didn't put it in their tea, which is what you kind of...
It's close, medication. So in court, her defense claimed that the substance was contained in their medication.
Okay. All of their medication. They were all in the same meds.
All four of them, yeah.
I think my defense was better, I'm just saying.
I'm thinking of, you know, Harold Shipman and how he... overdosed all those women with wasn't it morphine, and that was all just labelled natural causes because they were older.
Yes,
and in fact, some of them weren't even that old; they were like in their 50s.
God,
yeah.
Hello.
Well, this is it. This is the sort of that it's that area of kind of people are willing to overlook up to a point, unless you're a happy woman, and then they kind of look at you.
If all these people are a bit older, it's like
So nobody bought that defence. And she was convicted of murdering two of her four husbands with beetle poison in 1956 and 1957, respectively.
She just missed execution.
Well, this...
Is that right?
I have a fun fact about that, actually.
Is it fun? Before you say it, is it as fun as you think it is?
Katie has a habit of saying fun fact no matter what the fact.
All right.
She likes facts.
It is a grim fact.
Okay, go on.
Got a grim fact about that. She was initially sentenced to death in 1958 for murdering two of the husbands, so she was poised to become the last woman hanged in England, but her advanced age allowed her to get a reprieve and her sentence was commuted to life imprisonment.
Oh my goodness.
Because Ruth Ellis was hanged in 55 and she was the last woman.
Yeah. Is that poor woman that...
Yeah. It's an amazing film starring Miranda Richardson.
Is there?
And Rupert Everett is the man she killed.
It's such a sad story.
It's an incredible film. It's very sad. But obviously, every execution in the 50s fueled the abolition movement.
Right.
In the same way that Derek Bentley, you know, the young man who was convicted of murdering the policeman, even though he didn't actually have the gun. Led to you know that
that's how they changed it.
Well, it just fueled the abolitionist movement. So I had thought, I had wondered if you know, after Ruth Ellis, they were unlikely to execute another woman anyway.
Yeah,
and maybe that was...
There was less appetite for it.
Yeah, so even if you gave the death sentence, I suspect they wouldn't have...
Then change, they could just go, but she's too old, so we won't do it.
Because there wasn't a rule about age.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems like a kind of interesting choice that they were like, oh, well, she's too old. Like,
there was just such a fight against it by that point. So was that always the method in the UK? Hanging. It was always hanging?
Well, in more recent times, we obviously used to hang drawn quarter you.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. We used to go full crazy. Yeah.
Was it 62 he died, the last...
I thought it was 50s case.
Oh, it was 50s.
I think it was 57.
Oh, okay. So
was that Pierpoint? I remember watching a film about Pierpoint.
Well, Pierpoint did all those executions.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's so hard to picture it here because it's just still so much in the past.
And America. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, you know, brag, but the day that we're talking, you know, Priti Patel's got to rule on whether to accept the extradition request from the US. And the single biggest factor, which I heard reported on the news, was whether or not he'd face the threat of execution. I mean, the idea that, you know, in America today, we're still having this discussion.
I know.
Yeah. Mm. It's quite scary. I mean, it's quite scary.
We're pretty
awful. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
we like to keep it.
Taylor, can you sort it
old school?
Because,
yeah, I'll make some calls.
But it, yeah, it is interesting, that thing about the fact that she was deemed too old to.
Yeah, and it does, it's now, because it's sort of a weird excuse. Now it's sounding even more like an excuse. Now we know the political context.
How long did she live after that, then?
So she lived for 4 years, and she died aged 70 on the 5th of December in 1962 in Holloway Prison.
Mm. Mm. Wowzers.
She isn't there anymore, is that right? Holloway?
The building's there, but yeah, they stopped using it. Yeah,
yeah.
It'll be million-pound flats before you can say gentrification.
And that is basically the end of the case. They did exhume the other two, the first two bodies.
Okay, I wonder.
And they were found to have the same signs of that poison.
Even her first husband?
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one and the lover that became a husband.
Oh, I thought those were the ones
No, they did the most recent.
Sorry,
two.
My farm defense as solid as I thought.
So they convicted her for the most recent two.
Okay, that makes
She's
more
sentenced.
Sense.
Then they dig up the first two to just check. And it's the same thing, but they don't need to have another trial because they didn't need any more convictions. Two will do it.
Right.
So they didn't bother to have another
trial. It's interesting they just did it for themselves. Like, do you know what I mean? Like the way you write maybe a spec script. You're like, I'll just do that for myself. Like, you know, presumably it's a lot of money to exhume some bodies, but they just wanted to know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
Was there newspaper coverage? You know, what did you find?
There was. I didn't actually look at archive newspapers or anything like that. I looked at other sources that had reported on it.
Yeah. I just wondered if they'd quoted papers, because this seems exactly the kind of story that would attract a lot of newspaper
attention.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does.
Definitely.
It's very sensational, especially with her nickname.
Yeah,
absolutely must be.
Particularly just that a woman murdering people as well is like quite big news. You know, we've obviously done 200 cases now, and like when it's a woman who is the murderer, who is presumably, because you always seem to get a description, don't you, of what that person looks like. If it's a female in history, you'll always be like, oh, this is what she looked like.
I'd be amazed if there wasn't a film, you know, like if there hasn't been a film made, it's interesting, and maybe it's because she was too old and therefore, but then that wouldn't stop you making her younger and sexier.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's funny because I've been involved in an exhibition that's about to open at the British Library called Breaking the News, and it's the history of news in Britain, and it goes back to like pamphlets from the Battle of Flodden in the early 16th century.
Wow.
But it looks at modern scandals and certain kinds of stories, and there was a scandal about this Mormon, you know those Mormon missionaries who come from the States, all very clean-cut and cute. And anyway, this woman had apparently kidnapped one and kept him hostage or something. Or it may have to be the other way around. I can't remember. But it was this big scandal and, you know, he sold his story to a tabloid or something like that. So I misremembered this.
But
that was in, I think, the 60s.
Okay.
And so I was just thinking around this time, you know, the 50s, is, you know, it's a big era for scandal in the newspapers. And they would have absolutely loved this story.
Yeah, this story would have been huge. Like, it's got kind of everything.
Yeah.
We will post it on our socials, everybody.
Write a script, I think.
Every other case we say that, we're like, so this is a series. This is a film.
We solved it.
Hey,
cheers.
Drunk women solving crime.
Strap in for this listener crime.
Okay.
Dear Fabulous Drunk Women, we're back in lockdown here in New Zealand, so this is sent in from then. So since there's nothing to do and once again socially acceptable to drink any night of the week, naturally I've been re-listening to all the old episodes and having a few wines along with you. It was during an episode where the listener crime happened in a pub that I suddenly remembered an incident which I think you ladies might be able to shed some light on. About 10 years ago, I was managing a pub in a small town. It was a quiet Sunday night when a man walked in. There wasn't anything particularly noteworthy about him. He was maybe 50 60s, average height, possibly a bit on the short side, stocky build but not muscly, dark hair, dark eyes, no tattoos, distinguishing features, tidily dressed in a nice shirt and trousers, not fancy but not cheap either.
This is like me describing my fiancé to my parents. he's not tall, he's not short, he's kind of like, you know, he's stocky, he's not got any tattoos.
He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. Fine.
It would make a very good witness, because I'd be like, it was a person.
I mean, this is a good detailed description, I have to say. So he was perfectly friendly and polite, and he ordered food and a drink before sitting down with a newspaper, but something about him seemed super familiar. As I was behind the bar pouring his beer, I suddenly remembered where I had seen his face before. His picture was up on the wall of our back office. Why? We'd received it via fax, remember those? A few days earlier from the police, who had sent it to all the local businesses, sort of like a modernish Day Wanted poster. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Alongside his picture, it said to be on the lookout for him because he was on the run and had contacts in the area who the police thought he might be staying with. It didn't say anything about why he was wanted or that he was dangerous or anything, but it did say not to confront him and to call the police immediately. I went to the back office to double check if it was him on the poster, and while I was pretty sure that it was, I'm a female, so I thought I should get someone else's opinion first before doing anything. And she's put here, hashtag internalized misogyny, which is a great hashtag. So I called the owner, who lived upstairs. She came down and had a look, agreed it was the same guy, and called the police. Next thing we know, at least 10 heavily armed cops were storming in through all three entrances to the building. We're talking full-on special ops sort of outfits, big guns and bulletproof vests. It was like something out of a movie. Now, New Zealand isn't as messed up as America, no offence to Taylor or any American listeners, and our police don't walk around armed, so seeing that much firepower, especially in a small town, was pretty shocking. The perp seemed a bit surprised at first, but not nearly as much as us, and then he just sat there calmly as they surrounded him. Then in walked what looked like the officer in charge of the team, along with a man in a fancy suit. I got the vibe that the suited guy was the big boss from the way he was so authoritative, like maybe he was lead detective or something. The suited man strolled up to the perp and they started chatting. We couldn't hear what they were saying because we were safely behind the bar, but they were way too relaxed for the situation. At one point, they were both even chuckling together. The perp seemed resigned to having been caught, and after a few minutes, he got up and casually walked out alongside the suited detective guy, still chatting, followed by everyone else. They didn't even bother handcuffing the perp, though they might have before they put him in the car, but we didn't see that part. So my question to you drunk women is, what the hell did this guy do? What was his crime? Why did they feel the need to send so many heavily armed police but not to handcuff him or put a warning that he was dangerous on the wanted poster? Only you ladies can get to the bottom of this. Lots of love, Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Jeez Louise.
I mean, my first instinct was that was a stag night and they like sent his picture to all the bars and they were like, let's get him, like, and the guy in the suit was his best man and it was just a prank.
And then what a wonderful response. Like, yeah, if that's a stag dude, then phew, because otherwise that's quite terrifying.
Well, police would probably like the excuse to get out all the gear, you know.
Oh, do you
so
think?
I think, you know, you often, especially if they don't know the details of it, you tend to, I don't know if over-respond is the right word, but you play it
just
cautious.
In case. Yeah.
Send out everything, just in case.
Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
And then
okay.
If when, you know, you assess the situation on the ground, this guy who knew him then says, actually, I'm okay to go on my own. So, you know, being generous, that's the way.
Yes,
so it might be misleading all the armed police.
Interesting. Mm. Yes, that's almost a misleading.
If you've ever seen a load of police cars turn up to arrest one guy, you know, who's doing nothing but is being reported
for
looking
for
a bit
worst.
Suspicious in a certain neighbourhood, you know.
Yeah, and then you've got the backup just in case. Yeah. And
But suspect was cooperative.
Interesting.
But I would guess it might be something like he was a drug dealer.
I was going to say, this feels like drug lord territory.
Okay.
Yeah. Because gangs are a thing in New Zealand, like they are in most countries.
Kind of being resigned to, I guess I'll be. But also, why has he gone to a bar?
To get dinner.
If you're literally wanted, and you know there'll be a wanted poster.
Did they say what town it is?
They didn't give the town, I don't think.
I've spent a lot of time travelling around New Zealand. I've been to some very small towns.
You might have eaten in this pub.
I might have eaten in this pub.
Well, also, the fact that they did over-prepare with all their armed guards might be why he cooperated so easily.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if they had turned up with just two police officers, he might have, like, look over there and run out the back.
Yeah,
exactly.
So he didn't really have much choice but to chuckle, resigned, and go with them.
Yes, I remember some heavily armed people around where I live. They were obviously doing some kind of sting, and they arrived, and we sort of realised something was going on outside, so we went out onto the balcony, which is like, I wonder what's happening. And yeah, there was all these armed police, and then they sort of did this whole thing and they chased someone, they didn't catch them. Ooh. And then I remember we watched it for a while, and then the guy's just like, I always remember he just opened a bag of Quavers, like the lead guy. He was just like, he just started like, they'd obviously, the guy they were trying to catch had gone. And I always just thought it was the funniest thing that he was just,
that's such a great touch. They did, like, you know, lighting a cigarette.
Opening
a bag of Quavers. I really want to see that in a cop drama now.
Right, because it feels like...
so humanising somehow.
Yeah. Just the sound.
Yeah, exactly. If they were like undercover as well, it's like he's probably still doing that.
Well, I don't know. So we're saying drugs, aren't we?
Yeah,
what's your answer? I think so.
Well, that's no, we have to solve it. So
Charlotte doesn't even know.
No, Charlotte's giving it... We're the only people that she can trust with this case.
Yeah.
And we say drugs. We solved it. Thank you for sending it to
you
us.
You are very welcome.
That was an amazing crime.
Yeah, that's great.
We have just enough time to ask Samira Ahmed, what are you up to?
What am I up to? Well, I've been involved in this new exhibition that opens on the 22nd of April at the British Library. It's called Breaking the News, and I've written the foreword for the book that goes with it.
Oh,
and it's
awesome.
It's just like a history of news in Britain, so it's quite interesting looking at the kinds of stories that come up. And when we started planning it, the pandemic hadn't happened. You know, the Ukraine invasion hadn't happened. So there's something quite sad in a way about how news has caught up with us. Yeah. But also, who knew that the more news sources there are, the more complicated things would get. Like now we don't even know how to trust the news because of all the disinformation out there.
Source checking,
which is so depressing. 50 years ago, you know, we were just worried about the Cold War and propaganda, and now actually it's much
it's a whole
more
different
complicated. So that's one of the things I'm doing. And then my interest goes back. I present Front Row on Radio 4. I interviewed Sooty and Sweep recently.
Oh,
it's probably one of the greatest interview experiences of my life.
Amazing.
So
can we see that?
You can't see it, but you can hear it.
Oh my God, Sweep, I imagine,
as Richard
incredible.
Cadell said, interviewing Sooty on the radio is like such a great choice. But I especially needed to hear Sweep. So Sweep did speak to me.
Amazing, that's so cool. Yeah.
And can we find that online?
Yeah, if you just search for, you know, Front Row and Sooty. And Samira Ahmed. There is photographic evidence. I took Gail Renard, who was the scriptwriter of Pipkin.
Oh, I know Gail.
Monty Co. Yeah, she's brilliant. She's a good friend of mine. So I took her along to see the show. And we joined, you know, he does meet and greet afterwards with anyone. So there's this huge queue of tiny children with their parents or grandparents. And then these two adult women waiting to meet and greet.
I love it.
Cadell.
Awesome.
But it was great. So I'm enjoying all that.
Amazing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You've been a fabulous detective. Give it up
for
Samira.
We never doubted your skills.
Have me on again. You never know, I might start drinking and see what happens.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast, and thank you for listening. Bye!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.